Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Alice knows what you think I've seen. Some strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Mops and Joe. Spider party they're gonna have out in the St. John's walls. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descarty. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Outstanding, my man. Outstanding. I just got back yesterday from being up in the Nevada area, which we're all going to be going. I met some wonderful, wonderful people, Marco Bill. You got to forgive me. I came down with a little bit of a cold. I think it has something to do with the altitude, but I wouldn't miss this show for anything. Ladies and gentlemen.
All right, we got both Donna and Don on, and they're raring to go.
I know they are. And you know, these are two wonderful guests. I want to tell everybody around the globe, first of all, of Don Monroe. He's the guy that we've met now and known for 15 years. He's been on our expedition with us, many different locations. He's even been in our movies. And I've got all the respect in the world for him and what he does. I was looking at the little ditty about who you put up there on the show tonight. It says, Don Monroe, explorer, expedition leader. Contributor to the cryptid world, i.e. Bigfoot, Sasquatch, red-haired giants, and just about everything else that goes bump in the night. Don Monroe, who found evidence of the existence of the red-haired giants in and outside of Lovelock Cave, securing pictures of what appears to be a large handprint in the ceiling of Lovelock Cave. I want to preface, ladies and gentlemen, by saying this. I'm totally riding the fence this evening, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. I met a woman, stand-up gal. I guess we talked for about, I don't know, three and a half hours. And everybody that told me said, when you go talk to this woman, she's a tough nut. What does that mean, a tough nut? She's all Paiute. She's the type of woman that, you know, she has her own beliefs. She doesn't have an open mind. Contrary, my people, I listened to her. I learned a lot from her. She's a hell of a gal as far as I'm concerned. This is a little ditty we put up there. Donna Cosette, Northern Paiute. Descendant. Remember that. She's a descendant of Captain Truckee, Chief Winnemucca, his son, Wovaka, and Captain Dave. Donna, known as a historian and activist for the tribal genealogy and local history, was paramount in the repatriation of the skeleton remains from several museums, restoring them to their natural state to be buried and respected tribal members to continue their journey. She did this. She took it upon herself, ladies and gentlemen. She knows that there are other things out there. Forgive me again. I'm not well. I think it has to do with the altitude. But like I said, I wouldn't miss this show on a bet. We're going to label this new movie, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard me talk about it. Monsters, Mysteries, and Myths. Because that's what I think we have encompassed up there in the Lovelock, Fallon, Winnemucca area, Virginia City. There's so much stuff going on, folks. There's the paranormal going on. There's UFOs going on. There's stuff up there. Who the hell knew that in Lovelock itself, there was a prison where O.J. Simpson had residence for the last 9 years? I didn't know that because I don't look in those directions for those kind of people. But guess what? It was there. And then when I delved into it and I found out what the Paiutes are like, and they're all not alike. Remember that. Just like the Italians, the Jews, the Polacks, the Irish people. There's always bad apples in every part of the world. And I'll be the first one to tell you. But we're going to have one hell of a show tonight. So what I'm going to do, folks, I'm walking the fence. You're going to decide what it's all about at the end. Do we have extra time tonight, Marco?
Oh, yes, we do.
Okay, so I'm going to give the first part of the show to my friend, a man that has shared the campfire with us, ate what we ate, slept where we slept, rode like we rode, and entered many, many situations together out in the brush. Without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring Don Monroe on with us right now. Hi, Don.
Hey, Don.
How you doing, brother?
It's going to be better.
You know, I've got to tell you something. I respect you immensely. And we go back now, believe it or not, it's 15 years. And how we met, and I met you up in Montana with the hand that you found that the cops gave you. And you were on the phone with me when the gal came out and gave us the DNA on it. Sometimes it's tough, you know, it's just like the skeleton we bought the rights for in Texas. And it's in our movie, folks. If you've seen it, you saw it. In excess of 7-8 feet, whatever the hell it was. Archaeologist says, no, it don't exist. Well, you saw it there.
That that hand right now, Tom, is down in the Texas Museum down here at the down at Tom Taylor's Museum down there. And he's doing research on it still. It's still undecided what it is. It's been a controversial a long time.
Yeah.
And it seems like the academics don't want to put their knowledge to work on it. They like to know the report you got that time was kind of muffed over. I don't think it was really the total story. That's
well, I think you're right, Don, okay? But I was perplexed when I got into this thing about the red-haired giants, okay? You did an article with the hand. Also saw M.K. Davis. Talked to him. Called him. He was perplexed.
Also you know, the whole thing
to Ron Moorhead. And apparently all three of you guys were there. Is that correct?
Well, I took Ron Moorhead back with Taylor back to the site after we discovered the hand and to make extra copies of pictures and also to make a casting. We have the upright position, which is very difficult. And,
well, you know, I got to tell you something, Don, before you go any further. I've had minimum 6 or 7 people ask me. Now, if handprint was up on the ceiling of the cave, how in the hell did he make a handprint?
Well you see, MK explains that on his blog real well about the details, but he was burning. He was dying. He was trying to push his way out of the cave when he reached up to push up the rocks. Now, he has burnt flesh on there, and that's the basic story. But there's more involved in how it happened that the fire was going on during the battle. And if you read about the battle in Sarah Widowmaker Hoppin's book, The Life of the Paiutes, Life Among the Paiutes, and it tells all about her. She was born in 1844, and she died in 1891, so she was alive 18 years old during the Civil War, and she also lived through the Indian Wars, which was approximately 1877 to 1891, so she saw a lot of action. And her book came out, and the white community out here and academics want to put her down as being invalid on the whole story, but you know, it's true. I'm here tonight for one reason, Tom, is to kind of clear up the belief in the road history the Indians have is all true. I don't have a bit of doubt of any part of it. And I worked for the Paiute Indians on both sides of the nation of the Indian Paiutes on the east and the west, Indian Nevada. Also, I've been there a lot over there, too, in those mountains with them around the Great Basin. And over with the ones over
there. Wait a minute. There's, you don't have to prove to me or a lot of the people out there that, you know, you've been all over the map. We know that.
No, I'm going to show you a little history.
Wait, Don. You made mention that Sarah Winnemucca, you know, she's, remember, we got her descendant here with us. You're saying that she, in her book, it states that she believed in the red-haired giants?
Absolutely.
Really?
And I've got the ISBN number of the book you can get that she wrote, if you want the number and I have on the phone here.
No, we're going to ask Donna, because she's a descendant of this fine woman.
That's right.
Okay. So now I'm first of all, I'm really mad at myself, and let me tell you why. Here they've had this going on forever, and it's been under my nose. I'm on West Coast, as you know, just like you, up in Montana, but was never discussed. It wasn't until the last 3 weeks that I got calls from the local flavor saying, hey, Mr. Biscardi, you better come out here. And I said, why is that? Well, you never heard of the red-haired giants? I said, well, I guess not. I'm stupid. I learn every day. And then they gone in and tell me that there's recent activity, Don, and that they saw prints. And that's when I went into action. I called you and I talked to MK, talked to Don, and they all told me when they were out there, they saw fresh prints. Is that true, yes or no?
Jay and I tracked one for over half a mile in the same area, red giant area, I call it that, up in Little Rock Cave. And it was in a circle, come back to where it started from, in a hunting way. You know, I'm hunting for bush to bush, rock to rock, and here and there. And the strides were very wide apart, but the definition was bad because you can't leave it a print in the sand and the loose gravel. But we did find the giant steps were far enough apart that was absolutely wasn't what it was. MK has a film of that that shows about a half a mile of that walking, and that's in the film too with the comparables. I had a broken arm at the time. I had a broken shoulder, and I just went left quick and fell over a cliff up there. And it was back in the day. Well, anyway, not too long ago, it's been about 10 years, but we also heard vocalizations up there at sundown, and it's been pretty horrifying in a way because it's an unknown plane. And there's been three times on that. Just did not take a lot of time on that, but we've had a lot of reasons to believe in giants still alive of some kind. Now, these giants could be anything that you want to put on it. There's a lot of stories of what it could be. I first heard about this when I was 18 years old as a hunting guide then for deer hunters in up in the area of Idaho, Montana, not Montana, Idaho, Nevada border, in the area of what they call the Duck Valley Reservation. And I used to go there once in a while for the lads hunting the deer. Anyway, I heard these stories. I was just a young lad then, so I took it to heart a little bit, not sounds. But over the years, I went along. I got into the Navy, and I came out of the Navy in after 6 years in there and back in the day. And then I went up to California for a while to live and worked down the city there at Frisco. And every weekend, I'd go up there with my wife, and we'd check out those caves. We're going back to the 60s now on this thing. So by 65, I was up in Winnemucca in the museum, and I met Pansy Lee. She was a curator. And about 85 to 90, she was in there for 44 years, I think. She said she'd been there that long. And she says she was disappointed because they wouldn't let her tell what she knows, and she couldn't go see what she didn't know about in the lockups at Berkeley, California, of all places. And she was disappointed. Well, I have some book for sale I'd written at the time. And
wait a minute, Don. I'm gonna interrupt you a lot now. Why was she disappointed? Did she know something that the others didn't know, and she was a Paiute?
She was not a Paiute. She was a white person, but she'd been here for 40 years, and she had handled all these skulls and so on, and the ones she had access to, and I was on that thing for 20 years before I ever met you. I was on this thing. And I took pictures, and you're on the internet everywhere where you can see them out there. And they're about pictures, but the museum today wants to disallow the whole story. They don't want you knowing about it at all, and they get upset if you mention it. And, the photographs tell the story. These photographs
I understand that, but here's the thing. Let's stay focused. When you went to the museum, and the curator, or whatever title you put on it.
Yeah, she's a curator.
Curator, okay. She, when you mentioned this to her, she was upset. Why?
Because she knew that giants existed. We had the picture to show the giant skull that's disappeared out of that museum. She had printed out, someone wrote it for her, I have a copy of it, one of those early copies no one's got, that tells about the red-headed giant story from the museum's point of view. And also, who took the museum skeletons out and this and that, tells about that in there. Written back about 1916 from memory. I got it somewhere put away. But that was disallowed to go out in the public after a while, and I still have a copy of that. Well, the whole story is too long to tell on this one-hour show here, but basically these red headed giants have been hidden from the public for a long time, kept down in the basement in the museum. You could see them by asking the permission to go down and see them if you knew about them already. But it took that knowledge to know about them in order to get down there because she didn't advertise and they didn't tell about people knowing about it too much. And it wasn't covert, but it was kind of halfway, how you say it. But they don't want
Is
to
this
see
the
it
Humboldt Museum?
Yeah, Humboldt Museum in Winnemucca.
Okay, and that's when you met this woman who'd been there for 40 years, right?
She was, it didn't show.
Okay.
She might have had pirate blood. I don't know that, but she had a real close association with the local tribe there out of Nixon.
And what was her name again?
Pansy Lee Martin. And
say the first name.
She was a real knowledgeable person, and she told me a lot of things that are
again. What was her first name?
Pansy, like a flower. Pansy Lee.
Pansy and Lee
Martin.
Martin. Okay.
Because
we're
going to
ask Donna if she knew her. Is she still alive, by the way?
Well, as far as I know, she's over in a rest home in Las Vegas.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I'm not certain she's still alive, though. That's what I heard.
Okay. So let me ask you this. you you found people out there that said these things did exist. You saw the handprint. You said he was holding up, I don't know, was he holding that boulder up or what?
Oh, he was trying to climb out, I'm sure. I'm just my take on that. We discussed it a lot, and he was pushing out, trying to get back out of the cave, desperate, burning, miserable, going down, how you say it, burning his hand, touches the rocks. There's much evidence in the Little Rock Cave yet of the smoke and the damage done thousands of years ago or hundreds of years ago in that story. They can't hide that. I mean, they've done a real good job with reader board outside of getting a current history of the last 200, 300 years of occupation by local Indians, but it's not the whole story by a long shot. When I first went there back in the 60s and 70s, the cave was much deeper than it is now. I suspect that BLM or someone blew down and let it shut because it's been a lot of it's covered up still. It's still possible in that cave there's some more evidence. And it's just amazing what they did. And then they kept covert and didn't tell about it. And I went back to Pansy Lee's Museum at least 25 times. I used to help her put the skulls back together in the downstairs. And she told me one night that the place was really spooky down there because it felt so uncomfortable. I said, well, see, the mandibles aren't back on the skulls right. It's like in the catacombs. You have to put the right ones on the right ones and everybody's happy. Well, that's just here or there, people believe, but we put the skulls back together with the right mandibles, and she volunteered, this is cheerful all of a sudden compared, this is really nice. Well, the pictures you see now on those photographs, I arranged those with Fancy Lee back in the situation they should be, and one of them's missing the skull. But then the current pictures today, you can't find a giant skull there. The ones you see there are the Paiute Indians who were massacred and probably cannibalized back in the day. The story tells a lot of things in it, and it's, they also ran with at nighttime and night hours in chase of Paiutes, and that's the wrong time to hunt because Paiutes still don't hunt at night, fight at night, ordinarily. And they dug holes in the desert and in the sand out there, and the Paiute Indians would fall in the holes. And they were so vicious, they'd even eat them alive. They even bit through their clothing. What this tells me here is really hard to believe that, but I can now. To run behind someone and bite their clothing enough to get to the flesh, you have to have a forward mouth, a forward muzzle. And there's one skull existing. We have a picture of it. The one museum has now been hidden from the public that shows a forward muzzle on some ancient creatures that were bipeds.
Well, you know, Don, let me ask you something. I have trouble with believing some of this, not you, the stories that's being printed. And let me tell you why. Because I asked Donna, I said, Donna, on the skeletons, again, folks, I'm not feeling too well, but I wouldn't miss this show for anything. On the skeletal remains that she repatriated, I asked her, did she find any bite marks? Did she find any knife marks on any of the bones or anything? She said no.
She never did find any on the skulls. They were mashed in, bludgeoned in by tomahawk or hammer or something they had that in those days to fight with. They were, no doubt about it, they cannibalized. The teeth in the giant head was filed down with sharp points like the South Pacific Islanders. And even the skull itself resembles the Polynesian type of skulls. More in the you get into the anatomy of the skulls, the mandibles and so on, you see that there's a skull there doesn't belong in North America. And they call them Pitikoff, but they also call them the Sail, S-A-I-L, Sail. That, to me, was a word like the Gaelic word Sail. It's still like that, pronounced that way. I found in the article.
Did you ever think, Don, just for a minute, excuse me. Did you ever think, or did you ever find out about the folk law? Did you ever find out about, you know, when we were kids, did you ever hear your mom or grandmother or somebody say to you, oh, if you don't eat your porridge tonight or you don't eat your spinach, the boogeyman's going to come and get you? Did you ever hear that before?
Of course, sir.
Okay, Let me finish the question. Don't you think that they had some of those type of folk laws with their people?
Of course, the boogeyman is still discussed in all kind of ways. Indians and also in Tibet, they use a Yeti and so on. And in China, the Yeren, and over in Australia, yeah.
Now, let's
stay
focused to where we're at tonight. We're at Lovelock and the Paiutes. Because Sinahaha, which are the bone crushes, which I think I pronounced it properly, and she'll correct me if I'm wrong, and the Puwahi, what kind of what's going on there. Okay? So, but that I thought was a folklore, but I don't know, Don. I want to talk to the people. And that's the reason why we're doing this movie. We want the world to know the truth. We know it as you've seen it and as you tell it and on the and the finds that you have. And you know what? I think the world of you. And I say thank you for what the contributions you're making to this subject. We'll get right back to you, Don. We got to pay the bills. Marco, Bill, let's go to the commercial. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Go. 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Well, I landed on the ground, I kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And we are back.
Thanks, Marco. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the fastest 27 minutes in a long time on this show. But anytime Don Monroe gets on, it's interesting as hell. Don, do you remember Paris, Texas?
Yeah, before we start that, though, I want to get something here. It's real important. The Paiute road history is the same on the eastern side of the state with the people around Ely, which is 7,000 feet there, and they are the same bloodlines, but they're separate tribes. I had a real good friend there until he just passed away recently, but he was very instrumental in telling me a lot of things. He even claimed to be half Sasquatch. Well, he might have been because he's also hairy over the chest and over his face and so on. And he also served in the Army and the military. And when I knew him over there, he's out there at the lawn chair, 100 degrees Fahrenheit cold. I mean, about 20 below zero out there on a steel lawn chair and had flip-flop shoes on and telling me he couldn't stand shoes and he didn't build a fire in his house. Anyway, what they tell me there, the same road history story I hear over in Nixon there. And basically, they say that these Sasquatch ran to the Reese River. Now, you get your map out and find the Reese River. I've stored there already. And there's a lot of stories back in there, and it's very well, how do you say, documented by the local people, and there are very few around. But the Indians go there to pick pinion nuts. There's pinion nuts that are 4, 5, 6 feet deep on the shells that have been going for centuries. And I got 3 or 4 Sasquatch stories from people there while I was there. And one man was just that same day, saw one walking down the road up back in the hills. And that road's by the Ichthyosaurus on the map. It's a aquatic animal that's been discovered years ago, and it's turned to a national monument. There's no paved road to it. When I was there last time, but maybe it's paved there now. 85 miles northwest of the town of Tonopah. I just down there a while back here about a month ago, and I camped in what I call the forest, like Joshua Tree Forest. Well, if there's places there to get water if you look for them hard enough, and I met donkeys down there. I fed them cheese sandwiches. Anyway, I got up in the morning and followed the donkeys to the water source. And it turned out to be close to Area 51, very close to that. But what I'm getting here with the road history they tell is you know, is everybody's got the same story. Even up in the Duck Valley, which is north of Winnemucca, quite a ways up on the Idaho border of Nevada. It's in Hawaii County on Idaho, the other side. And that, there are stories I got when I was 18 years old. That's been many years ago. And they don't change. There's they're very fussy who they choose to give the stories out to the people. They're not just out there making the scene. They had people who were creditable in the tribe to even tell these stories. And if after that happens, how you interpret it is up to you. I knew an Indian there for years and years, a good buddy of mine named Gordon Davis. I'm sure they know him there on the tribe there still. He died about 1999, probably. I'm not sure what year. And I went down there to get like a cheer myself off their medicine one time. He finally was passed away. But anyway, in the 10, 15 years I knew him, we did a lot of things down there in the desert. And he showed me a place. I won't elaborate too long, but I will not tell about it. I promised him I wouldn't tell about it. I'll go back with him. But where red-headed giants are also buried.
Okay.
And I did
well,
see
let's,
myself.
Let's time out for a minute. Time out.
Hello.
I've given you half hour right now. Let's bring Donna on by herself,
and then after her,
we're going to have both of you on together where they can ask you guys can ask questions back and forth. Okay, Don?
Oh, great.
All right, so we're going to mute you out right now.
All right.
Okay, Tommy, Tanya, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you something. This gal that we're bringing on, she doesn't do many shows. She's kind of, like Don said, kind of on the down low. But I'll tell you what, you get to meet her and you get to listen to her and hear her stories. She encapsulates you. She did it to me, okay? And without any further ado, I'd like to bring my newfound friend, Donna Cosette, on the show. Brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Fasten your seatbelts, because here she comes. Good evening, Donna.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm a little under the weather, and I think it's because of the elevation and, you know, all that rain and wind up there, and you come down here and it gets 80 degrees, and I don't think
everything
I'm ready for that anymore. I was when I was younger, but as I'm getting older, it's taking a toll on me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
You heard Don, okay?
Yes,
we gave
him
the first half hour. I told you who he is. He told you what he's done. He told you what he's got. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, I'm sure, okay? First of all, I'd like for you to tell the people around the globe who you are.
Well, my name is Donna Cosette. I'm Northern Paiute. I'm half Paiute. My mom's full-blood Paiute, but my father's from Kentucky. I was born in Shurs, and I've been, you know, listening to our elders and working with my tribe. I've done many different things in trying to repatriate our people to bring them home, along with others. It's not just myself. But, you know, with regards to the Lovelock Cave and the people and our families there, I think I might be, you know, disappointing a lot of people in regards to who the redheaded giants are. The book with Sarah Winnemucca, Life Among the Paiutes, that was written by Sarah Winnemucca, and in her story, you know, and I think... Don Monroe talked a little bit about that here and also in the last show, and so I won't go too much into that. But these remains, they were excavated, and they were taken to UC Berkeley, some of the remains and artifacts, and eventually there were different parts that went to different museums at that time in the 1920s. The remains were sought after. And not just the remains, but also artifacts from the Lovelock Cave, because there's a a wonderful thing that was happening, and that was the Tutankhamun was excavated in, you know, at the pyramids, and there was a lot of fascination about the pyramids. In fact, these were even equated to the pyramids and the remains and the mummies that were found there, in which they are not anywhere close to, you know, comparable. But nonetheless, you know, these things were fascinating to people, and it was intriguing to the world. And so there goes, you know, a lot of the artifacts that left the state, left our people. And I know that the Lovelock Paiute tribe has made efforts and has repatriated a number of remains along with artifacts and basketry back to the tribe. And also the remains from the Humboldt County Museum. Those were repatriated in 2017 or 16, back to the tribe. And they were all reinterred, everything was. And, you know, I've, unfortunately, you know, with our people, we have a thing called ghost sickness. When our people pass on, we don't talk about them. We don't say their name in firsthand. We just talk about of them as a relation. And so every time people start talking about these people, you know, we are afflicted with that. We are the ones who have to deal with the ramifications of, you know, what does it mean to constantly think about bringing our people home? What does it mean to us? Nobody ever considers how our traditional values are and how we have to deal with these types of things. But these remains, nonetheless, they were repatriated. They were not any different from, and I've seen them, I've held them, I've even helped bury them. And they were no different than the other individuals that we've repatriated, both, you know, with the tribes. And but, you know, it's really interesting to...
Time out, because what you're telling me and you're telling the people around the world, okay, is the stuff that repatriated, okay, and helped them go on with their journey, they were just regular Paiute Indians, just like you and others there in the tribe. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. You know, I...
It comes to any of this red-haired giant stuff, you had nothing to do with that.
What do you mean with... I have nothing to do with the red-headed giant stuff.
Okay,
oh, you mean as far as them being giant and hairy and leaving footprints everywhere? No, I don't have anything to do with that.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay,
the stuff that you helped transport... and to reinter, bury, so they can go on their journey. The one that you held yourself, none of those bones, skulls, whatever you had, were of the red-haired giants.
The remains that we're speaking of today, they were the ones located at the Humboldt County Museum. There were only skulls and mandibles. And they were donated to the Humboldt County Museum by the Stoker family. And those were all repatriated.
Okay, so I'm glad you said
The ones that Don Monroe was talking about and assembled the mandibles to the skulls, those are the ones I'm referring to.
Okay, so these are different bones than what Don talked about.
No, these are the same exact bones.
They're the same exact bones. Were these the ones that are in the cellar that Don talked about? Or downstairs,
yes,
that he kept referring to?
Those have been repatriated, yes.
Okay. Did you know this woman, Pansy Lee Martin?
No, I've only worked with Dana. I can't recall her last name, but she's the current curator director there.
Okay. But you never heard her name passed around?
No, I've heard of Pansy. I unfortunately have not met her. I think she retired a few years before I went over to the Humboldt County Museum to meet her.
Gotcha. Okay. Great. I just wanted, for those just coming in, you know, tuning in, I just want to let them piece the parts of the puzzle together. So go ahead. Continue on.
Yeah, so these remains, they were repatriated, and The only difference that I seen was one of them had was very heavy. They weren't large. You know, there's some stories about caucasoidal features and cranial measurements in which that's been debunked throughout, you know, a lot of archaeological fields. It's not a true science. Therefore, people in science now want DNA, not only DNA, but they want the mitochondrial DNA. And these sets of remains did get that done to them from probably the world's most leading authority on extraction of ancient DNA, and that's S.K. Willerslev from Denmark at the University of Copenhagen. And those tests came back saying that they were of Native American descent. They weren't of Caucasoids or anything. People don't hear about those things, and they don't want to know about them because it doesn't fit the narrative in which people in this, in our neck of the woods want to hear. The same thing goes with some other older remains that were found in the 40s in our area, and they too have not been really, you know, talked about, which is fine. We don't, in fact, want a lot of this stuff out in the media. Therefore, you know, we know who we are. We know our history. We know where we come from. We know the land in which we live, and we have intimate details about all of it. And we are satisfied with that because we don't need validation from anyone about who we are and where we come from. And that's probably why the mystery of, you know, why don't the tribes continue to or try to say what they want? You know, we are on our own path. We choose to repatriate our dead respectfully. And that's how we do it. We don't, you know, talk about them openly. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Okay, so I got something for you, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I talked to you about it. I told you about that woman I talked to who's Shoshone and registered in the Fallon Paiutes. And her mm-hmm. grandmother and great-grandmother apparently is still living. And she had told about the red-haired giants, talked about Bigfoot up in the Eureka Mountains, which isn't that far. I thought right away, was she talking about Eureka, California? She said, no. She says, not, you know, a couple hours, I guess. Is that a couple hours from Fallon?
Yes, it is. It's east of Fallon, along Highway 50.
Yeah, but it wasn't just her. There was other elderly Paiutes that I had talked to. You know, I was up there, as you know, when I met with you. You know, I was there for 10 days. I was out at the caves. And I was a little perplexed when I first went out there because, you know, they have that little board and the little restroom that they put up there, and I guess the BLM did all that, right?
Correct.
Okay. But then it shows around the map, is there multiple caves up there? Because as you're looking at the sign right across from the bathroom that they put there, it only took 3 minutes to go around the mountain, and there's the cave. But is that, and then they, you know, they put that platform, and of course they had the other thing there, tell them what it is. But the way I looked at the map, it was going the other way, and I thought there was another cave. So what's the story on that?
I don't recall that there's more than one cave in that vicinity. What I do understand is when the back guano miners were excavating, somehow, I think, I could be mistaken, but I think it was them who blew up the entrance, the original entrance to the Lovelock Cave. And so a lot of that backfill or a lot of those big boulders were with the result of the entrance being blown up.
Okay. Now I got a different story on that. Story I got that the BLM brought a backhoe up in there and took a lot of the boulders and dirt and stuff and kind of barricaded it up.
I'm not sure about that, but I think it might be in, written about in the Lloyd's book, The Lovelock Cave.
The one that's from 29 in University of Berkeley?
Yes, yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, I you know, I've got to tell you, okay, you see all this propaganda, you see all this stuff that's written, you are of the Paiute descent. You're a pretty sharp gal, okay, in my opinion anyway. My question to you is, did the red-haired giants exist in the Lovelock or Fallon or Winnemucca area? Yes or no?
No. The Sciatica did.
Okay.
Sciatica was there.
Tell the world what Sciatica is.
They're the Thule eaters. Sciatica are the Thule eaters. They were... you know, I'm just going back to an old story that one of my great uncles talked about, and his name's Boyen, and he was from Lovelock. He was one of the last great chairmen for that tribe. But anyways, he talked about, and also our tribe in the Toyteteta tribe, the cattail eaters. That's what our tribe names are, our band names. Talked about one of our origin stories of, you know, two children that were not playing nice, and they were separated by their father. And one was sent to what's now Stillwaters, and the other was sent to the Lovelock area, the Humboldt Sink area. And those are the people in which, you know, these old origin stories were talking about. And because they fought each other all the time. And at that time, he said that they were, you know, born to the same God, that they both are the same, they spoke the same language, and they were relatives. Now, you know, when you're talking about the Paiutes, we do also have other stories and other legends, and one of those would be Paiutso, and that was the bone crusher, and she would take people and take her to her cave and crush you up in the big mortar and a big pestle, and that's what her name is Paiutso. And then there's Ninet. Many people know about the Ninet, the old Ninet stories, you know, the child be good stories about you better be good or you're going to get eaten up by Ninet. And it, to us, you know, the stories of after contact, because the Great Basin was probably the last frontier to be explored within North America, because everybody opted to go around north, south, east, and west of the Great Basin because it was so inhospitable. And for just, you know, visual sake, there was nothing there for anybody to prosper from. And so therefore it was just avoided. But after that happened and the pioneers started coming through, you know, we started hearing stories of people getting stuck in the snow and some bad things happened. And so, you know, Paiutso stories started to come true. And so, you know, a lot of those things, they're true to an extent, and they're, you know, child be good stories to an extent. But that's not to say that people don't experience certain things. You know, even within my family, we have stories of large moving people moving about, witnessed by even my grandmother, you know, in the 40-mile desert. And you see, so it doesn't... It's not necessarily talking about the Sciatica, because, you know, when you're talking about the writing of the history of Nevada, the United States government kept very good track of their Indians, and oftentimes they always related that every group of people had matriarchal societies, and so they picked out their matriarchs for our communities in which we are more both matriarchal and patriarchal. Neither was above the other. And one of the people that was written about from the Humboldt Sink area was a man by the name of Captain Sue. And he was written about, and he was Saitika. So they were around at contact. You know, just nobody bothers to listen, because the other story is more fantastic. It makes a better read. There's, you know, a lot more to it, but the people were still around. And these are his people, the Saitika, the ones that we repatriated. And he, too, was Paiute.
You know, there's another question I want to ask and put into the mix, as I was told by a couple of gentlemen. They had told me about, I guess it's one of your descendants, Captain Truckee. He had befriended Captain John Fremont.
John C. Fremont, correct.
Okay. And apparently they had called Fremont to come in with his big howitzer to come in and fight these red-haired giants. And then I found out, they said to me, oh, well, you know, tell me where the cannon is. What happened was the red-haired giants did not get all blown up. They captured the cannon and they buried it. What's your take?
That's a new one. But you know, remnants of the howitzer cannon has been found in the Sierras. There's the California and Nevada Association on the Humboldt or the California Trails Society, and they've already talked about that. They found pieces of it. But, you know, when he came through this area, he didn't go as far as a Humboldt Sink with that howitzer. He would have stayed on the east, or excuse me, the west side of the river, and went up and over, probably like through Nightingale Pass, over to Pyramid Lake. And there's even a photograph of that cannon at Pyramid Lake by the pyramids. So I seriously doubt that he would have made a special effort to cross the river with this cannon to go and blow up the entrance or blow up, you know, Saitika with that cannon. That would have definitely been talked about more so, but I think that's a fallacy.
Yeah.
Personally.
Well, you know, I took your advice. Thank you for your take on that. I took your advice and I got a copy of the Lovelock Cave book, okay? The one that Llewellyn Loud and M.R. Harrington did. The one that was down in 1929 that you found in your own library?
Correct.
Okay. But you know what? Until today, I cannot find, and questions, everybody asks me, what was the population of the red-haired giants in Lovelock or Fallon? Can't find anything, and nobody knows. Why?
It's probably because they rounded up. An Indian is an Indian is an Indian. They rounded all the people up and put them on the same reservations. They moved them about. Some people were moved into the Mueller the Mueller camp in now Oregon. They're moved all around. There are some tribes who are totally displaced. You know, the duck eaters from the Carson Sink were moved to the Stillwaters. One of my grandfathers, Wahi, was moved from the Big Bend in the Carson River. He was moved over to, I think he went over to the Humboldt Sink area, and then in different places. You know, they've been displaced. They've been displaced because it was necessary to gather up all the rogue Indians, if you will, and put them in one location that could be manageable. And this is the time of when, you know, Fort Churchill was being established and built, and it was a day's ride in any direction from that location for the people of this part of the Great Basin that they could manage if they were out in, you know, further areas. You know, so they were probably displaced, because when the numbering started happening here, I think at that time, earliest that I've seen was probably, and these were just general numbers, they didn't show the population of the actual locations of where the encampments were. But the roundups, they just had general population numbers, you know, number of Paiutes. There was like 2,000 as of 2,500 Paiutes as of 1880s, you know, so, and that's just in our little neck of the woods. So that wasn't too many people. There was a lot of people who died, you know, from disease.
And that's another subject that I want to get into with you. But you know what? Just like everything else, you know, we got to do a commercial and pay some of these bills. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other side of the commercial, we're going to have both of them, Dawn Monroe and this fine lady, who I've really, really learned to respect in a short period of time, Donna Cosette, and they're going to ask questions of each other or answer whatever in about 2 minutes. Let's go to commercial, Bill.
1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I got to tell you, that's the day I thought I was going to challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
We had found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear that?
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television and Tyler Lundgren. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And we are back.
Ladies and gentlemen, every time I listen to that little ditty, and that was Bigfoot Lives 1, it was best documentary, best producer. And by the way, Dawn Monroe was in that movie when we were out in Paris, Texas. And that guy that you heard talk, Bob, he was a field reporter and an ex-Navy SEAL, and he doubted, he said, there ain't no Bigfoot. And then you see, he got in front of his own camera and said what he said. And we changed his mind, believe me. And there's a lot of other people in this world that we changed also. I got to tell you something, folks. I and those of you who are in my text, I'll get back to you. I'm looking at it right now. There's 171 texts that have come in since we started the show. There's 423 emails that people are emailing me. I'll get back to each and every one of you before tomorrow comes, I'm sure. I know it's a hell of a show. Anytime Dawn is on, and now with our newfound friend Donna. And I want you people to keep an open mind. She never said that she doesn't believe in any of this, but she knows and talks about what she knows. And that's the difference, folks. It's just like me. Everybody says to me, well, how come you don't go into the paranormal? Well, can I put a ghost in a bottle and bring it back to show it to people? We can show apparitions. in camera form. We can do the EVPs. We can do the EMFs. But you can't get one of these things and bring it back, can you? But guess what? Under this new film, this documentary, it's going to be a Lollapalooza. People are going to go nuts. Monsters, mysteries, and myths. And it's all up in this quadrant in Nevada. I saw some stuff that made me turn my head, made me think twice while I was up there for the 10, 11 days. And I says, wow, all this stuff has been going on, and where have I been? I'm traipsing all over the United States and hell and gone and back looking for this thing. And look what's right under my own nose. This afternoon I get a call, folks, from this Fallon area. Apparently this mountain range there where they've got the same thing going on. Well, Mr. Biscardi, when are you coming back? I'll take you to an area where I think they are now. So we got a lot of content, and it's not just going to be Bigfoot. It's going to be the red-haired giants. It's going to be paranormal. It's going to be UFOs, lights in the skies. It's going to be all of it. All that in a bag of chips, folks. Okay, without any further ado, let's bring my buddy Don Monroe on and my newfound friend Donna on. Are you guys there?
Donna, you're correct 100% on what you said about the Red Pigeonary Act and the skulls I brought out earlier in the show, that they were all bludgeoned in and they looked to be cannibalized, that looked to be like. And but there's one skull missing in the pictures that you can see on the internet, on ghosthuntingtheories.com, Sharon Day's show. You can see it on David's report. You can see it on original films. As far as I know, I have the only pictures taken ever been recorded. I'm not sure anybody else has them or not. But the one large skull is different than the rest of them, and it's obvious. And it disappeared about, I'm not sure what year, but it was just last 15 years sometime. And I had a show, too, until last December, 17 years.
Hold on. Let her answer the question.
Well, ma'am, I'm telling her to get a little history for it. I understand.
Oh, wait. Donna, did you hear the question?
Okay, the question is, did she ever see the skull?
I'll have to go and look at my photographs and see exactly and compare them to the photographs you have posted. I haven't done
them. You have four pictures on your camera, probably, that has a pile of Indians. I agree 100%. And the ones that you counted out there in the depths, you know, I'm sure you're right about that. But the one skull that I asked on the radio 2 years ago, did anybody know where it went to, was taken out of that museum, and they deny it was there, and we have three or four people filmed with it, my crew, who have been down with me at different times, holding that skull, Paiute skulls in this case. And that big skull was there then.
Is this one of the skulls that were, that they made the clay bust for?
Yeah, the clay bust was made earlier on, I can't remember what year, 1980 probably. And
is it that skull? Is it that skull you're referring to?
No. I have pictures of that, too. I've never showed those, but I have those. That was a clay done, and its effigy was very true to life of how it should look when it was flesh and bones. And the large skull I'm referring to
was repatriated as well.
Pictures.
Wait. What did you say, Donna?
Because that set of remains were repatriated as well.
They were?
No, that skull, it was not. It was disappeared before the act even... 1991, wasn't it? What year did that start? 1991? The Pigeonary Act of 91, I think it was. This skull disappeared before that. And I put on the radio that asked people in the world to let us know if they know where it went. There was five in the picture that I have, and there's four the Pigeonary Act took back that I know about, and one mandible without a skull to it. So you had no doubt about it, if you correct me if I'm wrong, but it was four skulls with entire skulls with the whole anatomy, and then one mandible without a skull, and then there's one whole skull not there at all, a large one that was big enough to be half again biggest rest up.
I'll have to go and review my notes and my photographs to see if it was included in it or not.
Okay, one more thing, Donna. Panty told me, and she wasn't sure about the number, but she said she thought there was 137 unknowns killed in that cave in that battle. And that would be the count that they ask about. Tom can't find the count for it. I can't prove that, of course. But
I've heard many different numbers. I mean, it amassed up to like 2,000 people that supposedly fit in that cave. But, you know, that is...
I have 130,700.
Yeah.
One more thing, Donna. Do you ever hear in your road history about them running toward the Reese River, too, when they ran out of the cave in fire toward the Reese River?
There's an old story that I was talking about that are origin stories, and it's of mother and father that went over, and there's many different places. There's even a foot in a stone that marks where they've been, and a footprint that I'm talking about. And, you know, there's rubbing stones, or rubbing rocks, I should say, but there's, and it does lead in the direction over towards Reese River, and that was actually, the Reese River up to Austin was Paiute territory.
It was, yeah. Are you about old dwellings used to be down by the west of Nixon up there where the petroglyphs are at, that's now got a fence around it now? Those used to be some homes that built there out of rocks. They were. I have pictures of that back in the 40s. Let's see, in 2017. I'll say 1970 probably. I got pictures of hovels, kind of like igloo shapes, were made out of rocks. And Gordon Davis and the other Indians I knew then told me these were built by people before they came there, who weren't Paiutes, you know, so old, and they're all gone now because collectors who picked up artifacts piece by piece they're gone. But I have pictures of the buildings. There was about, from memory, four or five of them. I think four or five different ones in igloo shapes that were built prior to the Indians coming to that part of the country in ancient times. And the story was that the people who lived there were fishermen. And you'll see fishing nets on those petroglyphs up there. And also, there was also a story of a large snake that's supposed to be a guardian. Well,
oh, you're probably talking about the Winnemucca Lake, Tanumamamui. That's probably what you're referring to, the petroglyphs up at the Winnemucca Lake, etched in tufa.
Oh, Horse Mountain there, where the big petrol festival was found. And the grinder up on top, it's stolen from your tribe. I've been trying to run it down. Anyway, there's a up on Horse Mountain, there's a cave up there that has an ancient place they ground the grain, wild grain, and rice and stuff like that. Well, the pestle was stolen away. I seen it years ago, back in the day. But it was large, manufactured by, you know, your efforts. Someone stole that pestle. But do you ever hear about the Joe Stromer? You know Joe Stromer? Opal Joe? You know him?
No, I don't.
He'd been on desert for 50 years up there and lives out in the Black Rock up by Soldier Meadows, yeah, in that area.
Mm-hmm.
He's a prospector, and we spent a lot of time together over the years. And he's now ailing a little bad in Gerlach up there. He's in a private home right now, but I need to go see him. But Joe's World War II vet, and he's that old, and he's getting up there where he's close to 100 now.
Hold on, Don, just for a second. Donna, do you have any questions for Don? Any remarks?
You know, when you go out to the Lovelock Caves, that is considered open range out there, too. So when the sand dunes go across the desert, in which they all often do, you'll see large footprints, and they probably came from cows, you know, because when I was out there 2 weeks ago, I seen the cows, you know, out in the range, out in the sand dunes.
Grant you that, but I'm also an old cowboy myself, and I can recognize cattle when I see them in cattle tracks. And these seem to be a four-legged animal, but they have much different tracks than a biped. And I wish you had could get a hold of M.K. Davis's film to show our half a mile tracking down these bipedal tracks across this area. There's no doubt about it. Some of them are definitely defined where it comes in the mud with footprints, not just. These are different sets of prints in the same time frame, but we found large ones in the sand, and we found them a half mile up where there's tracks available, and they're 17, 18 inches long. And there's no doubt about it being a human-type foot. If you measure the heel of any kind of human, including your own tonight, or Tom Piscardi's heel, my heel, anybody's heel, it won't exceed 1 3/4 inches, 2 inches is max. And every Sasquatch track you find, even a child is wider than the normal child we have. And a 4-inch track, a 4-inch heel, is conducive to most of them you find, about a 4-inch heel. And if it was smaller than that, I suspect a human being. Never before in anatomy studies, these guys, that like these doctors of universities, don't bring that fact out, that the heel is so important to identify these tracks. And these tracks we found had wide heels. I put my plaster in more than 200 tracks in my life, or 300, I'm not sure. And I know I can almost smell them when they're right or wrong.
Let me ask you this, Don. When you saw that trail of tracks going down, did you follow them?
Yeah, we did. We was really curious.
So where'd they go? Where'd they end up?
They started, you know, where you go to the cave and park your car?
Yeah.
Well, there's outhouses there. I was over on the flat laying there moaning, and I broke my shoulder. And I've had a real bad shoulder for 5 days. But I wanted to finish our expedition and finish out our efforts. So MK went to the cave alone up the trail. And I'm laying there moaning and groaning, and I noticed this track next to me laying there. Holy smoke, this is a different kind of track. And it was a biped. I had foot like a human somewhat. So large. And I said, hey, come over and take a look at this. And he did. He said, man, let's take a walk. And so we walked right from that outhouse. He went directly east in that basin right there. That goes from bush to bush, rock to rock, and this natural place where cottontail rabbits and so on will be out there, you know, harvest. And there's other animals out there in the desert that you know how to hunt. And this had gone that way, and I can track you across a rug and house. I can track anybody. I have to. But anyway, so the thing is, we could tell that what was walking there was not a cow. I mean, cows are herd animals, and when one goes, more goes. And usually you have 4 or 5 dozen of them at the wild cat, those cows. And they this would not cow. Man, I grant you, you're right, because you know, but this would not a four-legged creature.
No, and I understand, and I agree with you, but I agree with her, too, because just last week, as we were going down, we left the paved road going on to the gravel road going up, and then when you hit the fork, you got to turn to the right, and you pass the BLM building, and you keep going on, and then you circle on around. And you know me, I'm trained as I go down the roads, especially the dirt roads, to see whatever kind of creature or any track that you see crossing the road. And I stopped because I had two other people with me, and I says, I don't think I believe what I just saw. They were cows' hoofs on the side of the trail, okay? And but then I found out that people are out there grazing their cattle, and you'll see them out there, okay? Of course, as you get up higher, they're not. But from the view from the cave, believe it or not, you can see where there's empty water lands, where something has to go down there to drink, okay? And I'm really banking on early in the morning, late at night, something's going to come down there to water. And I think that's where we're going to have part of our guys to see what we can capture on film down there.
Well, you're right. It takes a little water.
One other thing.
What, Donna?
You know, I just find it really fascinating that all of these tracks are going into the Lovelock Cave, but yet, you know, the witnesses of actually seeing them or even out in the desert, you know, is kind of interesting because, you know, if they're as big as you say they are in comparison to the handprint that you posted on there, there'd probably be maybe one could fit in the cave. You know, one person could fit, one, you know, redheaded giant that you're talking about could fit in that cave. And it just doesn't seem possible.
Are you aware of your old history about the giants on the earth that were in charge of the Paiute tribes and all the tribes of North America at one time? There's supposed to be 7 of them, and this one has a name, too, that we think we know what it is. Might have been. I've been told that by some Indian people.
Wait a minute. I didn't hear this one. Say that again.
Well,
was red-haired giants that were in charge of the Paiute?
I've been studying giants for 50 years, okay? Well, anyway, there's supposed to be at one time in North America, that's the whole thing, was 7 giants were in charge of the tribes, and it's kind of like a King Tut. You know, they had they were priority people, and they would charge the different tribes. And in your petroglyphs, you see this too. And the stories go back in the time of, you want to go to Genesis in the Bible for one reference, that puts you back before Christ a long ways in the Old Testament. Now, there are many documentations of this around the world. But Tibet, even Australia has Yahweh. I went down there and got tracks of the ones here. Anyway, it's amazing what this road history talks about in different facets of the Indian nations. And I work with the Blackfeet Indians and the Blackfoot, different ones, if they're far apart, and the Paiutes, and I've been used sometimes. I have with the Lummi tribe quite a bit, and down in California is down on the Chumash, down on on the coast here, right?
Wait a minute, Don. Wait a minute. I want to ask Donna if she was aware of this. Are you aware of this, Donna?
No, I've only been living Paiute for the past 50 years. I haven't heard of that story. I've heard of other people, like I said, Paiuto Ninit, but not of what you're talking about. I've never came across anything that mentioned them either.
Donna, we have a picture I sent them last show. I didn't know if you're on the show again, but it wasn't brought in on the last show somehow, of a giant, a candid picture of a possible giant. It's not what do you say, 1,000 pure evidence, but it was following us out of an area. And we take pictures candid all the time. I've had some results on account of that. Well, three cameras, didn't even see what we had until we got to home, got to camp, got printed films out. Well, this one, I think Marco has a copy of that picture. It's about 300 yards or so away from us, and it's following us out of the desert areas. And it appears to have a walking stick, and it's huge. I went back to the area where the bushes are showing to estimate the elevation of the creature, whatever it is, and it looks to be, could be around 10 or 12 feet tall. And it's a picture, Marco has a picture there, and it's the only one I know about in the world that I've ever seen like it. What, too long ago?
I know, I seen that, the first time I seen that picture was my aunt showed it to me, and you must have been there and talked to my aunt in Lovelock, and
that's
not just,
a picture, this was taken ourselves, we took this picture ourselves. This is one of
I know, it was a knife in front of the handprint.
No, that's not the same one. This is a giant. This is one lone creature walking across the turf out there in the badlands out there. And Marco has it there. The one you're referring to is another picture. It's too hard to explain here at this point. But anyway, in Lovelock Cave was also a picture of showed up. It was not at all a giant. It was in that photograph accidentally. That's another story. But this one here I'm talking about is two legs standing up, walking, creature. And it was behind us. There was three people there, reputable people, besides myself, seeing this. And is it there, Marco? You got that photograph to show? Am I talking to nobody?
Yeah, Marco, are you there?
Yeah, Marco, you have that giant picture I sent you?
Yeah.
Where can we see it?
Is that to show people what that is?
We can look at the, if you go up www.bigfootlive.net is the radio webpage.
Okay. And what do we see?
Well, we're going to see all the pictures that Don sent me.
I sent the picture of the giant for Tom especially, because I want Tom to see that.
Are you talking about the one that's got the...
It's just by himself, walking across, a lone creature walking across the turf.
Yeah, okay.
Nowhere.
If you go up to www.bigfootlive.net.
Okay, I'm on it too. So where do I click on to?
On the very bottom of the page, you're going to see a PDF file with a number 2 in it. It says Don's Picks.
PDF, yeah, okay. Click there. Oh,
Oh, shit. What is that thing?
Well, I'm saying it's a possible giant of some kind. And I went back there since the time, and we found more evidence of the probability of possibility.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you do go to Bigfoot Live, here, let me see, BigfootLiveRadio.net, okay?
No, BigfootLive.net.
Okay, BigfootLive.net, okay? And when you get there and go all the way down to the bottom to the right, it'll say Don's Picks 2 PDF. Click there. And you know what? There's something there. And, you know, you see the desert all around it. You see this large thing standing up. And it's something. Then underneath that, you see like a wolf's face. Then, of course, the hand in the ceiling. And then there's another face. And
well, say that's going on different ones. That's another story, but that's true. The wolf face is in five years apart in two different caves, 900 miles apart. That's another story. That's a totally.
What time
story.
Of the day did you take this picture? You said you didn't know
which
it. You came back from camp. Back
giant?
From camp. Was that during the day?
Yeah, about 4 in the afternoon.
Wow. Do you see that, Donna?
No, I can't find it. I'll look at it. Look for it later.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm seeing it myself for the first time right now.
It makes you look back at possibilities of a lot of things. So we just came from the area it was walking in, and there's nowhere except there's lots of hollows in the desert to walk in the desert mountains. So you don't hide anywhere. And we found also over 100 tracks another time, another trip in the same area. Up from a water hole, and it went for a long ways and toward dark, and it was they were the best I ever saw in my life. They were wonderful tracks. But it went deep in the mud and into the sandy mud and into the salty mud, in fact. And one of those sinks out there has salt, salinity, and some of them have water that's over 20 feet deep. You know, careful. But you can die in the desert pretty easy out there with water or not. But anyway, the giant thing is on my list. I never even believed in giants, particularly in the last 10 years. I got a track, and I had a little 24-inch track, and there was four guys with me, so that's as big as I know about. 2 weeks ago in Oregon, I was down with Ron Roseman on his trip, and we got a 23-inch track. And that amazed me, and Tom Scardy's got a 21 over in, I know I'm expecting to come along. I think Rex Havishel took it back in the day down by Happy Camp. 21, 24, 22-inch.
I was there. I remember
yeah.
that. You know
yeah,
what? It's getting to the point, yeah. ladies and gentlemen, and believe me, from the bottom of my heart, Don, I thank you for contributing and being a part of this show. Donna, I'm elated to get to know you, and I hope this can go on to be a long, long relationship with you. And ladies and gentlemen, remember, okay, this is their viewpoints, okay? Everybody respects everybody in the Bigfoot community, I hope. All right? You just heard two of the best have what they experienced, what they went through, the pictures that they have. They told stories. Donna, you know, she's part of this. She's lived with it for 50 years, as she said, okay? And I'll tell you what, she's a stand-up gal. Donna, again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks. Don Monroe, you have an open invitation as always. We're going to be out there on the 17th, the day after Father's Day. I invite you. I'll always share our campfire with you. And you've been on many, many expeditions with us in the past. Kudos and salutations. Till next time, America. Thank you.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests. and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they died. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monster, mystery, legend, tales, and facts.